Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, on this Friday, September 20th, 2013, a day when the new Pope admits the church is obsessed with sexuality and starts to dial it back, a day when the new president of Iran signals his government has been obsessed with nuclear weapons and hints he'll dial it back, a day when the Tea Party remains obsessed with defunding Obamacare and food stamps and is not dialing back its government shutdown threat, and a day when we will hear how doctors have been obsessed with telling women things they cannot do during pregnancy, when some of them maybe you really can. One of our guests today will refresh the list. Emily Oster, author of the new book, Expecting Better, Why the Conventional Pregnancy Wisdom is Wrong. But we begin today with the tale of two cities, whether you support Bill de Blasio or not. New numbers from Wall Street and the Census Bureau reflect the extent. Greg David is here to fill us in. He's the Crain's New York business columnist and director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, and he's got a column about this today. Hi, Greg. Welcome back to WNYC. Greg, can you hear me? Greg David. All right. Well, I don't know if Greg David can hear me. I can't hear him.
I can hear you, Brian.
Oh, now you're there. Okay, glad to have you. And I'll let everybody know that Deputy Mayor Howard Wolfson will also join this conversation in a little while. So,
do you think they know about the Russian part? They got posted like 30 minutes ago.
The what?
The Russian billionaire part only got posted 30 minutes ago. Do you think he knows about that? That's my question.
Well, we can ask Howard Wolfson that in a couple of minutes. But
all right.
Your column is about Dow 16,000 while middle-class wages stagnate, something along those lines?
No, the first piece was inequality rising, and the second piece was the mayor's wrong on the Russian billionaires.
Right. All right, well, tell me about the Russian billionaires.
Right.
What about the Russian billionaires?
He's wrong. He said we want all the Russian billionaires to move here. The Russian billionaires will not solve the inequality gap as Mikhail Prokhorov shows, because his money goes to only a few people.
So here is that clip that I think you were referring to of Mayor Bloomberg on his WOR radio show just a short time ago.
The reason it's so big is at the higher end, we've been able to do something that none of these other cities can do, and that is attract a lot of the very wealthy from around the country and around the world. And they are the ones that pay a lot of the taxes. They're the ones that spend a lot of money in the stores and restaurants and create a big chunk of our economy. And we take the tax revenues from those people to help people throughout the entire rest of the spectrum. And, you know, it gives you this income inequality measure. But you want, if we could get every billionaire around the world to move here, it would be a godsend.
All right. So, again, in context, wouldn't it be great if we could get all the Russian billionaires to move here because they would pay so much in taxes and boost the economy? So the inequality, measures of inequality are a little inaccurate because the rich people here are so rich, and if we have more of them, we're better off. How much do you disagree? The Greg David I thought I knew would say that's true, wouldn't he?
No, it's just more complicated than that. And let's take our most prominent Russian billionaire, the owner of the Nets, Mikhail Prokhorov. I'm not sure if I got his name exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's spending a fortune because of the deals he made over the summer. The Nets payroll is now an NBA leading $101 million a year. In addition to that, he has to pay $85 million to the NBA in what's called the luxury tax. So where does that money go? The $101 million goes to exactly most of it, 80% of it goes to five players. Do they have homes in New York? Yes. But do they have homes everywhere else? You bet, including states with no income tax. Do they pay taxes? Yes. But, you know, their accountants figure out every day they're in New York. So they only pay taxes in New York for the days they're here. And then the other $85 billion, the luxury tax, that's just going to the other NBA owners. That's sort of like revenue sharing for the plutocrats.
I don't know what the other Russian billionaires who live here do, but is the NBA or the Nets a different example than most parts of the economy?
Yes, no, it's not a different example than the very rich. It's typical, and here's why we need to worry about this. It's not, inequality is rising in New York again at a time when there is really good job growth. So if you take the mayor's clip, inequality is fine if a rising tide lifts all boats. Well, that's not happening. You know, we got numbers from the census today that showed the poverty rate ticked up and also showed that the average household income didn't go up at all. So despite the enormous gains at this very high 1%, it's not lifting the New York City economy because it's just not broad enough. It's not about the billionaires. It's about a much broader group of very rich people. You know, you have to ask yourself, and the question I've been asking myself over and over again for much of this year, is why, despite this enormous job growth, this doesn't feel like the late 90s or the years before the financial crisis. Why is all this job creation not lifting New York the way it did before? And one answer, and maybe not the definitive answer, but one answer is that when the gains are concentrated in such a small group, and nationally the figure is that 95% of the income increases since the recession ended have gone to just the top 1%, it doesn't trickle down. It's not driving the economy.
And before we bring Howard Wolfson on, you also cite a study that shows while the top 1% earn 44% of all the income in the city, they only pay 25% of all the taxes. How do you get to that figure?
Well, 44% was the figure in 2007. It went down, and it's back to 38.6%. So that's where we are today. It's the Fiscal Policy Institute figured it out. And I have no reason not to trust the way they do it, despite their liberal political agenda. But it would appear that the reason for that lies primarily in the city's property tax system. You know, we don't tax residences hardly at all. There's these enormous tax breaks for residences, no matter how much they cost. And therefore, it would appear that the billionaires who buy the 10 and 20 and $30 million condos we're reading about so much, they don't pay a lot of property tax. And as a result, their tax contribution to the city isn't as much as the income they represent in the city.
Well, Deputy Mayor Howard Wolfson knew we were going to have this discussion today, and my guest is Greg David from Cranes and the CUNY Graduate School. And Deputy Mayor Wolfson wanted to add his voice, so we're delighted to have him too right now. Deputy Mayor, thanks for volunteering.
Thanks for having me on.
Have you been listening to Greg David, your erstwhile ally?
Erstwhile this morning, yes, I have been.
And?
Well, look, I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm not going to get into what the Nets do or don't do. To me, the argument is fairly simple. There are approximately 18,000 taxpayers who pay approximately 40% of the city's personal income tax. The question is, do you want more people at that level paying taxes or less people at that level paying taxes? So when the mayor says, yes, it would be better if we could attract wealthier people here so that they could pay taxes and that we could then redistribute that wealth to people who at the lower end of the spectrum, to me that is an obvious conclusion about how you'd want to have tax policy. There are only a few ways that you can get taxes from wealthy people. You can raise the marginal rates. You can have more people who already live in New York City essentially graduate into that upper income bracket, or you can attract people with that kind of wealth from other places. So why wouldn't we want to attract lots of wealthy people from around the country and around the world to pay the taxes that essentially we then redistribute to people at the lower spectrum who need help?
You would want to be doing all of those things, including raising up the people who live here into greater and greater wealth, right?
Absolutely.
It's not either or. So, Greg David, let me put that to you. Wouldn't, regardless of the limited impact compared to what we might hope very rich people have on the city's coffers or on the rest of the economy, it's still a net plus. So wouldn't it be good as one of the things that a city government would want to do as Howard Wolfson is saying, to try to attract a lot of those rich people?
Well, it's just too simplistic an answer. Why not? Well, first of all, it strains the political social safety net. It does. Bill de Blasio won the Democratic primary because people don't agree with this, because they feel left out in the system. Two, it's just not working that way these days. That's the problem with this great Bloomberg job creation story, which is in its basic approach real. We're not seeing an increase in wages. While the unemployment rate is a very suspect number, it is simply too high. Wages aren't going anywhere in the city, and it wasn't this way before. We have to ask ourselves, why is it different this time?
Well, Greg may want to pretend. Well, I don't know if he does or doesn't. That may not be fair. What you just said to me sounds as if you think New York City is an island, as if we didn't elect a president in 2008 who ran on a very progressive platform, wanting to do something about poverty, wanting to do something about inequality. And inequality has grown on the national level. So it's not all that surprising that inequality would be an issue in New York City if it's an issue.
Howard, you can't have it both ways. You're trying to have it both ways in the argument, and you cannot have it. The mayor's refrain, which has been absolutely true for the last 3 years, is that New York has done better than anywhere else. We have had double the job creation of anywhere else. The country has not recovered its jobs in the recession. We're at an all-time employment level. He's going to leave the city with 4 million jobs. That's a great story. You can't spend 90% of your time arguing that and now say the fact that inequality gets worse is a national problem and not subject.
No,
you either just got to be on one side of the story or the other.
No, you're wrong. It means that you can't actually solve every single problem at the local level. But an extraordinary mayor doing extraordinary things can solve an awful lot of problems, and we have. It doesn't mean that you can solve all of them. I'll give you another example. Guns. We have the lowest murder rate in the city's history. We are going to set another record again this year, 25% off last year's all-time low. We are the safest big city in America. But we still have a problem because we have a national problem. 400 murders is 400 too high. And one of the reasons why we have 400 murders is because guns come in from other places with lax laws. So you're right. I'm going to claim credit for the policies in this city that work, the things that the mayor can do and has done. And I'm also going to say that we are not an island, that there are national policies that impact this city, that impact every city.
Well, Greg, to that point, are you arguing just that City Hall is portraying things as too rosy economically in New York, or are you arguing that there are things that the Bloomberg administration has not been doing that they should be doing in order to address whatever a mayor can affect about this?
Actually, the points I'm very interested in making are, one, attracting all these billionaires is not solving our problem. It is a simplistic way to look at the economy. It is simplistic to say, well, they pay all the taxes, because it only makes sense to attract these incredibly rich people if we result in an economy where a rising tide lifts all boats. A rising tide is not lifting all boats in this economy. So there is something wrong with that strategy. Second, despite this enormous gain in jobs that the mayor is every right to be proud of, it is not helping the city in the way the job gains of the late 90s and the mid-2000s did, and we ought to be asking ourselves why and what it means.
And why, Howard?
Well, let me take that in two parts. The second part is, Greg is right. We have a problem in New York City and at the national level that not everyone is doing as well as they should be and can be. And you're right. We ought to be looking at that. And we ought to be looking about what is it about the differences between skilled and unskilled labor and what they bring to the marketplace and how the marketplace is compensating people differently at different stages of education. That's true around the country, and it's true in New York City. So I don't disagree with that at all. But the idea that that attracting billionaires is the sole focus of our economic policy. You don't believe, you know that's not true, and you don't believe that. That is one way, attracting wealthy people here, not just attracting them, by the way, but retaining them so that we keep their tax dollars. That's a strategy. It is hardly the only strategy that we've been employing. If that was the only strategy we've been employing, we wouldn't have a record number of jobs in this city, the most number of private sector jobs in the city's history. So let's not be silly and say that the mayor's economic policy is about attracting billionaires.
So,
the mayor believes that we need to attract and retain wealthy people in this city so they pay taxes. I would assume, by the way, that people who support redistributionist tax policies, whether you want to raise taxes on the wealthy or whether you want to lower them, especially if you want to raise them, don't you want more wealthy people here to pay those taxes?
The third and the most important reason for raising these issues now, which is, since Howard and I are actually on the same side in this great debate, I'm saying that the arguments the mayor has advanced are inadequate to counter the arguments of Bill de Blasio. And if the vote earlier this month didn't show that, I don't know what will. The fact is, the mayor's lost the inequality argument in New York. The results of the Democratic primary show that. And people who want to make this case have got to come up with better and more sophisticated arguments.
Well,
and so that is the issue that's on the table, that it's time for the people who care about this issue, in which in many ways Howard and I are on the same page, have to explain it and understand it and maybe modify policies in a way that wins the popular approval, because otherwise the Bill de Blasio redistribute the wealth and raise the taxes argument will carry the day. And that's why it's important today.
Well, you're right. I mean, we are mostly on the same side of the argument. What I would say to that is, look, the mayor wasn't running for a fourth term. We were not running ads. We were not in debates. We were not part of the Democratic primary process, which had a relatively small number of voters. So, you know, someone else, you're right. If there is an argument to be made in a political context, well, in an electoral context, someone else is going to have to make that argument because the mayor's not running for mayor again.
Deputy Mayor, let me ask you about one of the things in Greg's column that came up before you joined the conversation, that the top 1% in the city make, and this is the 2007 number, but it's approaching this again, make 44% of the income but pay only 25% of the taxes because of property and sales taxes. Do you agree that's a problem?
Well, if you look at personal income tax, it's much different. I mean, the top 1% is paying around 40% in personal income tax. If you want to get into the inequities in the property tax structure, I think there's an argument to be made towards that end, and I think, you know, the next mayor, whoever he is, may choose to go to Albany and try to reform a property tax structure that does have serious inequities in it. I don't disagree with that. I mean, we've had lots of conversations internally over the years about some of the problems with our property tax structure. It's set in Albany. It's been the way it is for a very long time, and I don't disagree that it could use some significant updating. But the personal income tax is paid 1%, pays about 40%.
I thought the property tax was the one the city could do at the city level without Albany. Am I wrong?
You can set the rate, but if you want to change the way different rate holder, different property owners pay different variable rates, that's something that Albany would have to do. In other words, we couldn't make it progressive, for instance, at the local level. We couldn't say, you know, we want to look at somebody's income or what have you, or look or graduate based on the value of the home. Those are not things that we can do on the local level. All we can do is set the rate up or down and have it apply in a flat way to everyone.
The mayor spoke on his radio show today about the poverty rate as not being as bad as 21% makes it sound, because other major cities are worse and food stamps and other supports make it more tolerable. Is that a little dismissive about so many poor New Yorkers?
Well, look, the poverty rate relative to other cities has gotten better under Mike Bloomberg. When he came into office in 2001, we had the sixth highest poverty rate out of the top 20 cities. Today, we have the 13th highest poverty rate out of the top 20 cities. Now,
but
you'd
it's over 20%.
You'd want to be 20 out of 20 in that measure. But 13 out of 20 is certainly better than 6 out of 20, which it was when he came into office. And so I agree. Are we where we want to be? No. Are we where we want to be as a nation? No, coming out of the Great Recession. But relative to other cities, we have made real progress.
Brian, the poverty rate in New York will always be high as long as we have immigration, because immigrants come to New York poor, and then they climb the economic ladder, as you've had many guests on the show explaining that, and there are numerous studies for that. So one of the questions we actually have to find out today is whether their immigration continues at a high level or has slowed. If immigration has slowed, then this poverty rate number becomes more of a problem. But our poverty rate numbers through much of the 90s were pretty bad, actually. But that was because that was when we had this enormous surge of immigration, which has done so much to improve the city. So like so many of these statistics, you just can't take them at face value. You have to think about what the context is.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And when you think about, okay, we've been talking about inequality, and now we're talking about poverty. The other thing we want to talk about is social and economic mobility. And when it comes to economic mobility, we are in the top tier of American cities, of large American cities. We are ahead of Miami and Dallas and Chicago and Atlanta, according to a recent study by a bunch of economists at Harvard and Berkeley. So this is still a place where people believe that they can come and make their way and do well, whether they're coming from other parts of the United States or whether they're coming from other parts of the world. And in addition to having a record number of private sector jobs, we also have record population. This city has grown in population significantly under Mike Bloomberg. Now, he likes to say, you know, people vote with their feet, and that is true. If people don't want to live in a city, they leave. We saw that here during the 60s and the 70s and the first part of the 80s. If people think that the city is a place where they can do well, where if they work hard, their hard work will be rewarded, they come. And you see that here. And so I would argue if you look at record low crime, you look at rising graduation rates, you look at record number of private sector jobs, you look at people coming in more than leaving, that this is a place that is still attracting those people who want to work hard and do well and get ahead.
Deputy Mayor, just one thing before you go about poverty and the income supports that the mayor expressed pride in this morning. The House of Representatives yesterday, as you know, passed deep food stamp cuts.
Yes.
What impact do you think that would have on poverty in New York if it were to pass the Senate, too?
Well, it could be significant, clearly. My expectation is that the Senate will block the worst of it, as they have on some of these other social welfare issues in the past. The House does something, and the Senate is able to take a more considered view and ameliorate what the House has done. But obviously, cuts of that magnitude would have a significant impact on poor people in New York and all around the country.
Deputy Mayor Howard Wolfson, thank you very much for joining the conversation today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Greg David, I gather you have a follow-up column to the one that sparked all this reaction today in Cranes on Monday. How are you going to follow up?
Well, they decided to post it today because they knew I was coming on the show. It's the piece about how Russian billionaires don't save the city and aren't really going to help us solve the inequality problem.
So a last word on your way out the door? That was an interesting exchange between you and the deputy mayor. I just said that was an interesting exchange between you and the deputy mayor.
Yes, well, it is interesting. And I think the reason I'm sort of frustrated is I actually agree with Bloomberg on many of these issues, but the way he has framed this issue recently, it's not the only place he has done poorly framing issues, has just not gotten us anywhere in a sophisticated and really important discussion about inequality and how it plays out in the economy.
And so now it's Joe Loda's cross to bear, huh?
Well, we'll see. He hasn't had much good to say either, frankly.
Well, maybe that's for our next conversation. Greg David, columnist for Crain's New York Business and director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And so poverty is on the rise. And so what's the House of Representatives doing about it? Cutting food stamps. We'll talk about that next and preview the impending government shutdown over defunding Obamacare. Stay tuned.